pledge drive show today. It's the last hour. We need you to call in and make your donation. That's kind of the topic of the day, but actually we're going to be covering geek news the whole show.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now, of course, for GeekSpeak. Saturday, March 13th, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. And welcome to GeekSpeak, bridge the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. The geeks today are Ben Jaffe. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, sir. How's it going?
I'm good. And Al Luckow. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
And Ben, you're a... what's your skills and talents?
I don't know. Rogue.
You're a rogue.
Can I be a rogue today?
Yeah. You're a teacher sometimes, and you support people, definitely. And you actually have a thank you.
I do. I would like to thank Lois from Aptos for pledging for just a minute before 10 a.m. Thank you very much.
Great. Al Luckow is a new media architect. You have any thank yous, Al? Maybe for me?
Thanks.
Yeah, great.
Just thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And the reason we're thanking people, of course, the reason we thank that person right there is because she made a donation to KOSP. And I'm asking you to make a donation. We have, of our amazingly large, in my opinion, goal to support the station, we've had people call in all week and make donations. And we're now down to $4,200, and this is the last hour, which means it's time now to get off your tush and donate to KOSP. Sorry, I've got young children. That's how I speak.
This is it.
This is the last hour.
This is the moment.
This is the moment. And we can do $4,200, no problem. That just means a few people that listen to the show, that like the show, and you're one of them because you're listening, call in with a substantial gift, or a lot more people call in with a gift that they, less than a dollar a day kind of gift, would do it as well. We have, unfortunately, we can't rely on the podcast audience to call in because, of course, the podcast won't be up till later today. But we, if you're podcasting and after the show, please do so. But the people that are listening live now, people in our coverage area, the people that are listening online across the world, you can call in right now. All you have to do is pick up your phone or go to kosp.org. And I urge you to do so. The station is very important. We'll be talking more about that, but we're going to cover some news first about why it's so important to us and why it's important to you during this hour. But of course, we're going to do tech news as well. The phone numbers to call in at any point you'd like, 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507, or online at kosp.org. It only takes a minute. Go ahead and do it. And I'm going to keep on introducing Lindsay Lonnie. She's an application engineer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, you know what? We played and guessed, and I'll just turn all the mics up.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can. Okay. You really were on five.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. And Miles Elam will be sliding in the door any moment. He's running late to some degree. So let's start the news off. Well, I guess with Al, with you, please.
Sure. You know, there's a lot of things going on the internet, and there's a lot of, responses that are happening. And I'm not sure if people are familiar with this website called Foursquare, foursquare.com.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
And what is it?
It's basically, they do apps for your phone that alert your friends where you are. So you all kind of join this big club, and then other people find out where you are. And so if you're at some place, then you say, hey, you know, Jane is at this place too. You guys should hook up. Or, you know, you kind of keep tabs on all your friends. And I think there's some kind of game associated too. You can get badges or some other thing in there other than just this GPS location.
It's actually something I'd kind of wanted for a while. You know, you're in town, you kind of know the friends downtown. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you don't know, but you think, hey, if I run into somebody, it'd be kind of cool. And this just kind of enlarges the envelope of where your friends are.
Yeah.
So you're, you know, at the coffee shop, but they're actually at the bookstore, mm-hmm. and you know that. You walk up to the bookstore and say hi.
Yeah, and it's a natural outcropping of putting GPS in phones. So these kind of things, Foursquare is one of the bigger ones, and they have apps for Android and BlackBerry and the iPhone. And so it's one of the larger groups, but there's a number of companies that do this. And now that would be, I guess you'd say, the yin. And now we have the yang. There are other sites cropping up. One of these sites is called avoider.org, AVOIDR.org.
This is if you don't like your friends?
Yeah. This one is specifically set up to work with Foursquare.
And oh, my God, really?
Basically, it's to keep tabs on your friends that you would like to avoid.
Oh. Wait, is it the same company? And they're selling the avoiding product and
you know,
the other one free?
It's a different... Yeah, really.
It's good model.
Yeah. It sounds like what a lot of the unscrupulous drug companies do, you know.
Right.
You need to buy this drug because this one makes you drowsy. And then, you know...
Just stack it up.
Yeah. But it says it's powered by Foursquare. And I can't say for sure that they're owned by the same company. They're different URLs. So being powered by Foursquare doesn't mean...
So how does it work? How does it hide the information of
essentially,
your
it says Avoider uses Foursquare to check where your not friends are so you can avoid them.
Oh, I see.
So it'd be fantastic if like your phone starts beeping or you know like the Star Trek alert sound comes up whenever you're anywhere near one of your non-friends. Like,
right,
you know,
right. And so you have to hide in your bathroom.
Red alert, dash into the alleyway.
Oh no, Bob is over there. You know, don't go in there.
All right, so the internet helping find friends and avoid enemies.
Yeah, it's like this perpetual machine that is, you know, one site does one thing, another site, you know, does the exact opposite.
Right,
you know,
and so it balances out.
They're feeding each other, and it's just, I thought that was sort of an interesting yin-yang relationship.
Very cool. It's like zero-point energy.
Yeah.
Balanced out the whole way. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
It's metastable.
All right, I have not looked through your news, and I know you guys have all just have awesome material. So, Ben, I'll just ask you to just tell me something.
You're awesome, Lyle.
Rob, great.
That's my news story.
Tell me about water or something.
That's my first water. Okay, I'll tell you about water. So, I'll tell you about something that interacts with water. So, I have been recently very interested in hydrophobic and what's the opposite of it? I can't remember the name off the top of my head. It's like something.
Dryophobic.
People are mouthing to me. No, but there's hydrophobic materials, and that is when you have a material which is has a phobia of water, if you will, right? The idea is that water will not stick on it. It'll just kind of roll off, right? So if you ever do Teflon. Hydrophilic. There we go. fantastic. Hydrophobic and hydrophilic. So hydrophilic water has it spreads out on this material, right?
Okay.
And hydrophobic water will bead up and it'll stay kind of a spherical shape. So we've been kind of working on developing hydrophobic materials for a very long time, right? We have Teflon and that's kind of everything phobic, right?
And specifically, you're not talking about the water being different. You're talking about the material that it's interacting with being
different. Yeah, the material that it's interacting with will not let water it won't get wet, basically. It's resistant to getting wet, right? So,
right. So basically, it doesn't make molecular bonds with water, and therefore the water's own internal structure causes it to bead.
Mm-hmm. In some cases, that's the chemical reason, right?
Right.
There is also some things that have physical reasons. Like if you ever see leaves with beads of dew on it, and the dew is in these perfect little spheres, right? Instead of actually wetting the leaf, they're just sitting on top of it, and that's because they're actually hairs that are coming out of the leaf. The leaves and the water is sitting and beating up on top of the hairs, right? And so this research by these physicists, material science and engineering people at the University of Florida were doing research on spider hairs, right? And how they could so what happens with spiders is they can actually trap air underneath their hairs so that way they don't drown, right?
Right.
So if they fall in water, they can float. So that's what spiders do. And they were saying that they could actually, they did with these little dime-sized plastic squares, they created spider hair-like follicles.
Fuzzy dimes.
Yeah, they made fuzzy dimes out of plastic. And they found that it actually had a very, very similar effect to with the spiders. Mm-hmm. And this works with hot water, cold water. It works if the water is moving or if the water is staying still. So it works really well.
But does that mean that there's a lot less friction then on the material? So if you, for example, had your pipes in your house coated in the inside of these little hairs, you'd have less pressure loss with water flow.
Perhaps. I'm not sure about that. If you had a jacket, though, that was made of this material, then you just would not get wet, right? Your jacket wouldn't get wet.
And everybody would want to feel your jacket.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Or like if you coated the bottom of a boat hull with this, right? Less friction, your boat would just...
Now, potentially. Now, that's one thing I'm curious about is it less friction than actually having the material be wet and then the outer molecular bond of the water interacting with water? Because, of course, that doesn't have a lot of friction when you actually have water, touching water, if you will.
What I find so cool about all of this physics kind of stuff is that it seems counterintuitive a lot of times. Our findings...
You add hair and it doesn't get wet? Yeah.
Yeah, our findings are the exact opposite. And actually, one of the... To go with that point, actually, they... for a long time, we were playing around with hairs, little plastic hairs or whatever on materials, of the same size, equally spaced. And we found that that worked kind of well. But the hairs that they were emulating the spiders vary wildly in size. They average about 600 microns, which is like 600 millionths of a meter. Very, very small hairs. But they vary wildly in size, and they're also not spaced evenly. Hmm. And that actually works way, way better than evenly spaced hairs of the same size. So it's actually like the quote was... So Wolfgang Sigmund, he's a professor in that department at University of Florida, he said, most people that publish in this field always go for these perfect structures, and we're the first to show that the bad ones are the better ones.
Interesting.
So
the non-uniform makes a lot of sense. And that's interesting because, of course, nature is kind of a non-uniform. When you look at different types of filters on Photoshop, for example, the better blurs are the Gaussian blurs, the non-traditional, that's actually a bad example. But when you do dithering, for example, in GIFs, you want a pattern that doesn't repeat because the eye sees that.
Exactly.
I bet with the molecular structure, when you have a non-repeating structure, you get a situation where you don't get a new, I want to say lattice, but a new type of structure that actually does it here, mm-hmm. right? So you want it kind of random. Really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating that the intuition of how things will work at a nano level, your intuition just fails
miserably. As well as the macro level, right? Yeah,
right?
When we're talking about humongous velocity,
right, when you see a giant
approaching the speed of light, for example, Newtonian physics went,
right.
You know,
but
failed.
Even our general understanding of how things work, when you actually see a giant building collapse, for example, you think, well, that doesn't look right.
Yeah,
right? Because you're used to dropping Legos.
In fact, totally Hollywood looks better than the reality of it, right? Hollywood
right.
looks.
Well, we've rambled on quite a bit about that, Ben. Thank you very much for the story about cool new materials.
That's research phase, right? That's not something that's coming out on the market right now.
Right.
But just to say, it is coming someday.
All right, and speaking of coming, right, is your motivation to get off the couch or pick up the phone, even if you're sitting down. It doesn't matter if you're standing. To me. But I'm talking to you, and the reason you know I'm talking to you is because you can hear my voice. And I'd like to say, hey, Mike, can you please call? But if I went through all the name deviations in our listenership, it would take us forever. And we only have a little bit of time. In fact, we have, 40 minutes left. And that means that we only have 40 minutes for you to call in right now to donate to the station. And I'm asking you to do this not because I'm not demanding you. I'm just saying to you, this station and what we do here, the KOSP exists, and we produce content because it exists. We produce the programs that you enjoy listening to. It only works when people participate, and that means you participating right now. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. We are at kosp.org, and if you're listening as a podcast listener, the thousands of people that download every week, you can contribute too. Go ahead and give us a ring. Or go up on our website, kosp.org. And I urge you to do that right now. I know you think you're going to put it off. You don't have time to put it off anymore. Now is the time to do it.
It's the moment.
We have any more thank yous? Let's move on to the next news segment. Lindsay, I haven't spoken with you at all, so please tell me what's going on with the URLs.
All right. So shady-sounding URL.
Shady?
Yes, shady-sounding URL. www.shadyurl.com. You can put in any URL and it will turn it into a shady URL. So like google.com, if you put that in, we tried it this morning and it turned it into IE Explorer, WTB1J Aryan Brotherhood.
Some horrible name. So this is kind of a side effect of using technology to shorten URLs.
Yeah,
this
tiny
idea is,
URL, for
this
example.
Idea is to make a URL that looks really bad but actually have it be really functional. What could possibly be the purpose of this besides to send shady URLs to friends?
Entertainment.
Okay.
It would be kind of funny if you said, hey, check out this picture of you I found, and then you put give them the URL, and it's like, you know,
it's like
some weird
thieves in Northern California.
Yeah.
Right?
What? You know,
what?
Yeah. I guess they must be aliasing.
Yeah, they're doing aliasing. Yeah. They're doing
it's much like tiny URL, except instead of making the URL get shorter, you're usually making it longer,
right,
and just putting in really shady sounding words. Actually, okay. Well, when I first heard about this last week, and I had this idea, instead of just doing one shady URL, what you can do is you can take the shady URL that you generate, and you could make a shady URL out of that URL, and then take that one that you generate, and so you're kind of chaining them together, right?
Oh, Ben.
But the best part is when they click on it and they see it redirect to all of these nefarious looking sites, like bam, 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 like, oh no, what's going on? What's going on? You know, I think that'd be fantastic. Like zipping a zip file, but
zipping a zip file and zipping a zip file.
But nefarious and sketchy.
Thank you, Ben.
Shady, if you will.
You know a little too much about the nefarious, Ben.
Yeah, he seems to get a little excited about it.
No, I just have the ideas. The only problem is I have morals. So.
Oh, if only you didn't have morals.
Boy, a really,
you know,
fantastic laptop just showed up here.
Yeah, yeah, and actually being pulled along by that laptop is Mr. Miles Elam, and Miles Elam's a student, actually a graduate now.
Yeah?
Miles is a Java programmer without a job.
Aren't we
not,
all?
Not that I'm pimping him, but that's what he is. Hi, Miles.
Hi.
What's up? You got a nice shiny new machine in front of you, a Mac. Do you have any shiny new news in front of you?
Yes, except it looks like it got deleted from the Etherpad, so I'm going to have to hunt it back up again.
I noticed that. I remember you saying to me that it's on the Etherpad, but it's not today. Yeah. Oh, well.
That's fine, because I happen to have the information in front of me, which is an antimatter supernova. It's
ooh,
a crazy.
How do we know it's antimatter?
What did you just say?
So, astronomers have recorded the biggest bomb in the cosmos. Which
in
is
the
you
cosmos.
Right.
Do you mean Ben? Because he's the bomb.
There's a joke, I was going to say. There's so many jokes we could.
But if you have a star that's, you know, around the size of 4 mega yottagrams, so take a one.
Yottagram?
Yes.
Miles, stop, you're blowing
or
my mind.
Or the larger yottagram.
My mind's going
right,
to explode.
Right, you have to give it a name because there's no possible way the human mind can wrap yourself around it. You take a 4 and then you follow it by 32 zeros. That's okay. How big the star has to be.
In what units? Centimeters?
No, grams.
Grams. Okay.
Mega yottagram.
Okay, gram. Thank you. I was stuck on the yotta part.
Oh, my god.
That should be the new search engine instead of Google.
Yotta?
Mega yotta.
Well, Google's bigger, though.
Megayotta.com.
So yeah. What you have are these very large stars that the gravitational collapse, in addition to any of the standard fusion going to higher metals, you end up with the gravitational collapse causing gamma rays. And the gamma rays are actually exerting an outward pressure.
Okay.
And as that pressure increases and the amount of gamma ray radiation increases, you end up with what's called pair instability breakdown. It's like having a large particle accelerator.
So much energy that you're producing antimatter.
Right.
With the gamma burst. Okay.
Right. And you have things just right, you end up with a large amount of antimatter coming out.
At the same time as the star's collapsing.
Right.
And
you end up with an antimatter explosion, so a massive explosion, but nothing except energy is left. So you don't have a singularity like a black hole. You don't have a neutron star.
Ooh,
you
neat.
Have an explosion and a hole. Just
gone.
Gone.
Lots of gamma radiation. Lots of little green men or big green men.
Right. And they know that this thing exists because they saw it.
How did they see it?
I was there.
So a big enough explosion or big enough neutron star.
It's a
new type, though.
Well, it's a supergiant star.
Because it's not a supernova if it's antimatter.
Right.
That's different. So they saw something that's like supernova and then went, that's a lot more energy than it should be.
Right. And then went, hey, where's the neutron star that would normally, the pulsar that would normally be in the center of that? It's gone. Right.
Interesting. Very cool. All right, thanks. Antimatter star.
Or rather, they didn't see it happen. They saw what had happened a billion years ago. But nevertheless.
Fair enough. You know, that the Lindsay, the little tiny short mention of the short URL, the shady URL that was kind of like short, was too short. So can you give me your next news story?
I can do that. So I was going to talk about the Fitbit tracker. And it's becoming sunny outside. People are wanting to get out, get in shape for summer, walk around. And this is something that you can wear all the time. And it tracks your motions in three dimensions and converts it into data. And you have an antenna in your house. You walk by it, and it basically will upload all your data. And you can track it all on the web. So it'll track physical activities like calories burned, steps taken, distance traveled. It can even tell you how long it took you to fall asleep, number of times you woke up during the night, stuff like that.
So what is it that you're – how do you get this information to the system?
There's – basically, you have a base station in your house.
Okay.
And when you get within 15 feet of it, it just detects that it's there and it uploads your most recent data.
Cool. So you don't even have to go and sync.
Nope.
You just have to walk around your house.
Right.
So how many probes and stuff to determine this? Is it just a pendant? I mean, how do you know how much calories you're taking in? Is it just movement stuff?
It says it's just movement stuff.
So it's not the amount of calories you're taking in, it's the amount that you're burning.
Right.
You basically say, this is how much I weigh, and it keeps track of how much movement you do, vertical, horizontal, the whole deal.
Exactly.
And then deduces from that it would take this much calories to move your body like that. Very cool. Yeah.
The key to exercise is making so you have the least amount of things to do.
Why is that?
So if you have something like this, you just...
But if you're just
clip
wearing,
it on,
yeah.
You don't even.
I think
you
kind of wear it all the time.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this and your sleeping pad system that you do, Al,
yeah,
you keep track of your entire body completely.
Yes,
total body awareness.
Right.
Very cool. All right, thank you, Lindsay. It is Al's turn, and let's talk about chocolate.
Okay. Well, I got a couple interesting things, and this was just something I ran across this weekend at the wharf at Marini's. A few months ago, I talked about. Bubbles that you could buy for your dog, bacon flavored bubbles.
Yes,
and the dog would
this.
Like chomp at them.
Yes. Well, who wouldn't chomp at bacon covered bubbles?
Mean, bacon flavored.
I'm a vegetarian,
anything, actually. So. Which, well,
not
Ben.
Most,
Ben, you're the funniest vegetarian.
Yes.
The kind that eat meat.
So,
or something.
Go on. The thing about bacon is it's pretty much the most delicious thing ever. So, Marini's has what you know. They sell all these chocolates and things. They have chocolate covered bacon. I don't know what to think about it.
I think it's breakfast.
It's something people should know about.
Yes. Okay, good.
Whether Marina or not says, you want to react to it.
Thank you.
I think you can always one-up yourself, though.
And, you know, where else would you find this out but public radio?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go on.
And there's another thing. I think it was last week or the week before I talked about the cameras that were detecting people's faces and things
we
like that.
We talked about that a lot.
Yeah,
it allows
yeah.
for focusing
well,
and light balancing. It's quite useful.
Well, Fujifilm is the company that makes this camera, and they just came out with another camera that has facial recognition for dogs and cats.
Good. So Fluffy will be in focus.
Yes. So if your dog or cat is in there, it will be in focus.
Good. And I'm sure blink detection and stuff, too.
Which,
you wouldn't want your dog not to be in focus.
It would ruin the picture if your dog was blinking.
I like the idea of going, do I buy a facial recognition for people or dogs and cats?
It's just really
I'm gonna have to do the dogs and
getting,
cats one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. They have them for birds. I don't know.
Yeah.
So then another thing that I thought was pretty cool.
They don't have it for snails.
Yeah, how do you tell if a snail is?
Yeah.
Actually,
are you certain?
That's true.
I see banana slugs like every morning in my yard, and I can tell if they're looking at me.
I think that's the next research in facial detection, banana slug detection.
And then I also saw this interesting thing. It's a Wi-Fi detecting T-shirt. So it's got like a thing right on your chest that looks like the Wi-Fi symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Wi-Fi symbol. And when you're in a Wi-Fi area, it's got a little bit of electronics in it, and it actually lights up to the strength of the Wi-Fi signal you're
nice.
In. Nice. So, you know, I mean, this would be a total geek shirt. I mean, I wish I had one.
Because
you come in here and you're just like, oh, you've got three bars of Wi-Fi here, you know, and I can see on my shirt. It's just like a big, it's a interactive shirt. And you can actually wash the thing, and the piece that comes off of it is sort of Velcro on the inside.
You
so
just pull it off.
So you can pull it off and wash it. But isn't that cool?
I think it's very cool. The only thing is it's on your chest, so it's hard to see. You have to look down all the time. You kind of need a partner with it.
Not only does it have the the signal strength, but it's also got, you know, it'll have the designation like 802.11.
It tells you that too.
It's got the actual thing.
This will be up on geekspeak.org.
Ooh,
whoa,
that's
it's
cool.
Got a display.
Isn't that neat? Yeah.
Very cool.
It's kind of crude. I mean, it's a dot matrix kind of looking display.
But it's a shirt.
A shirt that detects Wi-Fi, you know? Yeah, what's that on your shirt, you know? That's the total geek, you know, right there. Yeah.
Thank you, Al.
Yeah.
In a minute, we're going to be talking about some taste research. Ben's got a story on taste research. Some PRS. I don't even know what that is. Guitar butt, some guitar stuff for the iPhone. We also have some information about FCC. We're going to be talking about that in detail like we do every week on GeekSpeak, so stay tuned for that. GeekSpeak on KOSP, supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. All right. I want to tell you a little bit about why KOSP is important to me, and I'm hoping that you'll have some parallels in this. I grew up in the Central Coast of California, in Ben Lomond, California, which is where I am now, and in Santa Cruz in general. And when I was about 8 years old, I'd go down to the radio station here and sit in this room, though it looked a little different then, with my father doing a radio show about arts. And he did information about performing arts, so music and theater and dance and some other art as well. It's called In the Green Room. He did it for years. And I sat quietly in the corner listening to that, and then going around the station and meeting all the people that are there at the time. Johnny, Genial Johnny Simmons, who I'm sure you know from his morning, well, his time so much on KOSP. I'd listen to him, play with him, hang out. He's a little bit like family. So KOSP to me has been a part of me, my life, most of my life. I now have an 8-year-old son, and he spends a lot of time online. And I get him listening to radio sometimes. Comes down here. He definitely listens to music. I want that same experience of a local community that he can connect with to continue. So that's one of the reasons why I'm so invested in making public radio work. That's why every week I spend about 6 hours making sure that GeekSpeak happens. And in the air with me, I've got 4 more dedicated people who as well spend tons of time making KOSP work. Not because we get some financial benefit out of it, not because we get any kind of improves our lives from a we can put food in our mouth kind of situation, but because it connects us with the community. It connects us with where we live. It allows us to interact with people that have an impact directly in our lives. And we share our expertise. We share our passion. So if you've got a passion for what we do for KOSP, if you've listened to the station and said, "Ooh, I like this show. Wow, you know, Daisy Hill Puppy Farm is an awesome music show, Friday nights, by the way," or "Johnny, just his voice on doing NPR News is what I want to be listening to." And I can't list everybody because there's hundreds of people that make KOSP work. A lot of them volunteer, like all the geeks. A lot more are you, the listeners, who sit and listen and make it a part of your life and understand that's important to you. So contribute. You're not here every week to do a show, but you are here every week. We listen and think about you. We do the shows for you. So it's time now for you to step up and make a donation. We have less than 4,000 to go. A lot less than 40,000 to go. We have less than 4,000 to go. We have 30 minutes left to do it. That means pick up the phone right now. We'll get us that much closer. And I know you've probably heard this a lot this week, but really all you have to do is pick up the phone, give us a call. And while you're dialing the number, which I'll give to you in a second, all you got to do when you dial that number, think, what could I spare? What could I show that represents how much it's important to me? Think about how much you spend on your cable bill. Think about how much you spend on electricity. Any other thing that's important in your life, you do regularly all the time. We're just asking you to do that with KOSP, with public radio. Think about what you can afford and how much it's worth to you. And make that promise to us that you'll give us that much money. It's very easy to do. 25 minutes left to do it. It only takes, I think, 3 minutes, less than 3 minutes. Miles, you have something to add to that?
Yeah, and for those of you listening, I know how you feel. You're in the car, you're listening to the radio, and you're thinking, "Oh, I probably should do that." And then you get to your destination and you forget, or you get caught, sidetracked, get something to do. I know how you feel. I've been there. I do the exact same thing. And so what I'm asking you to do, it's Saturday, it's a beautiful day, just pull over on the next exit, give KUSP a call, and go right back on your merry way. Just take that little extra moment just to... so you don't forget, because we all do. We all do that. It's not making us bad people. It's just, let's take that time. Take that moment.
Take that moment to donate to KOSP. The phone number is to do so, 888-777-1507. Hey, you might talk to Rick, who's here every week supporting KOSP. He's in the other room taking pledges today. Lots of other people donating their time to take pledges. So give us a call and talk to them, 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Of course, you can go to kosp.org. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily, and I just read that. It's open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Well, I guess John Bauer at Santa Cruz Electronics is going to be happy with us today. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Whole Foods Markets, featuring products without artificial colors, preservatives, flavors, or partially hydrogenated. Thank you. Fats, Whole Foods Market in Monterey, Capitola, and Santa Cruz on Soquel between Branson 40 and Seabright. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. It's time now to call up and give us a pledge, a donation. The geeks today are Ben Jaffe, Lindsay Lonnie, Miles Elam, Al Luckow. My name's Lyle Troxell. Answering the phones are a whole bunch of people waiting for your call. We have 24 minutes left during this amazingly long and wonderful pledge drive. And I say wonderful because all week long I get to hear people I know that I care about asking for you to participate. Phone numbers 888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. I love when I do the pitch forward because I actually know what was coming up next. I think it was Al, but I don't know who's first. Gosh,
it's Ben or Miles.
Ben or Miles?
Yeah, I think it's Ben.
Okay. Oh, first I want to thank.
Oh, yeah, taste research.
Yeah. No, I've got some thanks.
Okay,
I've got
thanks.
Thanks for a couple of people who pledged. We have Anonymous in Santa Cruz. Interesting name. Thank you for pledging to KOSP. Lisa from Los Gatos, thank you. And Marvin from Salinas, thank you all for pledging to KOSP. So yes, taste research is... So some Australian scientists claim that they have found a new flavor sense, and that's the flavor sense that would be associated with fat. So
yeah, it's not umami?
No, not umami. See, we already have sweet, we have sour, we have salty, we have bitter, we have umami. And umami is basically the ability to detect protein, right? And sweet is carbohydrates and sugars. And they're actually saying at Deakin University in Melbourne that they have found that some people can identify or that we have this taste to identify our other macronutrient, which is fat. So in this study, it was a sample size of 33 people, so it's not by any means conclusive, right?
Right.
It also, I don't know exactly where it's been published, but it sounded pretty interesting, so I thought I'd cover it. They say that their findings show that some people are better at detecting fat than others. And again, this is a relatively small sample size, so more research is needed, but they said that the higher a person's fat tasting sensitivity, so the more that they could taste fat, the fewer fatting foods that they ate on average, and therefore the lower their body mass index was. So just kind of an interesting that piqued my interest at least, and I'm excited to see some further research on it.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to move over to
iPhone? Oh, yeah. There are so many cool things for the iPhone right now, and if you're a guitar player, I play guitar, there's never been a better time to either start playing or to investigate it. There's so many free resources. There's tutorials on the web. I mean, if I'd had this stuff when I was 16, I'd be Eric Clapton by now. I mean, if you really are interested in...
Overstatement.
Well,
go on.
I mean, you could just go in there and just learn any song you want. It's all just free. Well, there's tools now for your smartphone, such as the iPhone. There's a tool I ran across called the PRS Guitar Bud. And this, you plug directly into your phone, and it will record straight from your guitar into your phone. So you can play and actually play and record directly onto your phone, and it has another input for your voice.
Nice.
So you're able to hear. Oh, you plug your earbuds in, so you can hear it, and you can record directly into it.
Nice.
Which is this amazing thing. I mean, you could be like anywhere, and just you have your phone and your guitar, and just play. They're showing it with an electric guitar, but obviously, if you have any, acoustic with an electric pickup or whatever. There's so many neat things like this for guitars.
Cool, thank you. It's called the RPS Guitar Bud.
PRS Guitar Bud.
Sorry,
yeah.
PRS Guitar Bud. Thank you very much, Lindsay. What's going on with Google?
All right, so Google has a new Labs app that's out, Public Data Explorer. It's not brand new, but fairly new, and it takes public data and can put it into these really beautiful, pretty graphs. Mm. So if you have a huge data set, you can load it up and show over time how data changes and progresses. So there's a neat TED talk about the rise of Asia, and they use these graphs, and I didn't realize it was the same thing at the time.
Oh, cool.
But it really helps to visualize things if you're a visual learner or anything like I am.
It's really important to do that with large data sets, because when you look at a spreadsheet, you really can't grok it. That's why we have pie charts and all these different chart mechanisms to really kind of look at it. But when you're talking about complex data sets, seeing a really good visualization tool just allows you to comprehend it.
Right.
So you import the data into the Google app?
That's the tricky thing right now, is that right now, because they only use public data. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you'd have to fill out a form and request that they make your data one of the things that you can view. Mm-hmm. And so, like, nonprofits, education,
right.
Different places like that can fill out the form and request that their data be one of the Ooh. Ones made public.
There's a lot of data out there that's interesting, though. I mean, there's a lot of information about, like, your neighborhood, for example. Mm-hmm. How much crime is there? What housing sales are? That's all public data.
Right. One of the examples they use is data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Census, uh-huh. and it's all unemployment and population growth. And you can take snippets and embed them into like your own web page and
yeah.
move the data around. It's pretty
okay,
neat.
I'm going to be playing with that probably too much this week.
Yeah.
I always have a need to do that with the program I help support at UCSC, where people want to look at data sets and figure out, because we're really in this information age, but we're not really understanding the data very well.
Right.
So it's a really interesting research area. Well, thank you very much for Google Public Data Explorer. Awesome. Miles, what's going on with the federal, what is FCC?
Federal Communications Commission.
There you go.
Wants to find out how fast your broadband speeds actually are. There's been a lot of talk. We've talked about on the show the difference between us and, for example, South Korea or Japan
right.
and their broadband speeds.
The United States is pitiful.
With Europe. Well, that's the question, though, because many of the ISPs have said, well, no, in real-world access, they may say they have the theoretical, but we have better pipes in general.
So how do we figure this out?
So what the FCC wants to do is use what we refer to now as crowdsourcing. In other words, get the data from everyone out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is you go to broadband.gov, assuming you have a browser that supports Java,
mm-hmm.
and then you click on a button saying, I want to test my connection quality. Or you click on the button that says, I do not have broadband at home, which gives information about where there are dead zones where people
right.
can't get broadband. And it says exactly how fast you are actually getting without having to worry about this ISP reports it differently from the other ISP.
So if you want to contribute to the study.
Go to broadband.
First what you do is you go up to kosp.org. And you donate.
Right.
Then you can go to GeekSpeak and actually find out the URL.
Yeah, actually, I mean, forget I said the URL. What you're going to do is you're going to go to
KOSP.org.
KOSP.org. You're going to donate. You're going to look up, oh, there's GeekSpeak on there. You're going to go to our site. You're going to find the link, and then you're going to
That's
go
right.
to
Participate
the FCC
in our
site.
Community.
If you have an iPhone or an Android
You can
phone,
test it there.
They have apps in their respective app stores. So you're not
Ooh.
Out of the...
That's cool. I'd like
wow.
to know, I'd like to know how fast my iPhone connection is at different locations, because it definitely varies quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if I've got Wi-Fi at home, it's much faster. Well, thanks for that. I'm curious, why aren't they just looking at Google, you know, YouTube, and seeing how much download speeds people have on YouTube? You'd have a giant data set there.
That means that they'd have to specifically query Google and have them give all sorts of
Additionally, the people that have low bandwidth aren't going to Google. So there it is. It's already nice.
So what they're doing is... And it depends. Some people don't use YouTube as much, and they may use it differently. They may be multitasking, which means that they're using a browser while they're looking at the YouTube movie, which is going to skew the results.
Right.
So this is going to be... So, by the way, when you go to check this out, don't do other things. Let the test run on its own without downloading email or doing web pages.
Well, thank you. I'd look forward to seeing what the results are, if we really are as behind the times with bandwidth as we think we are in the U.S. We have $3,500 left to go in our pledge, the entire week, this whole half a year, only $3,500 left to go. We have 15 minutes to do it. Call up right now and donate what you can afford. It will get us closer. Your activity right now will help the station, will help us produce great content. Participate. 888-777-1507. Ben, some people participated?
Yes, indeed. We have Matt from Big Sur. Thank you very much for making a pledge. Keith from Santa Cruz. Thank you. We have an anonymous donor in Salinas. And we have Andrew from Santa Cruz. So thank you all very much for making a pledge.
Thank you very much for making a pledge. If you weren't one of those people, you can be. The phone number is 888-777-1507. It only takes a couple minutes. You can donate $10 a month if you like. Real simple. We'll deduct it from a credit card. Very easy to do. Takes a moment to do it. Please do so. 888-777-1507. Really, 15 minutes left. Ben, you had more Google news?
I do. I have one more piece of Google news, which is really, really exciting for me. So for the longest time, I've been biking around, and I've been using Google's walking directions, right? So I didn't really know how long it would take, and I had to develop a little formula in my head and everything. But Google just released a bikeable map route thing. So it'll actually route on streets that don't have really, really steep grades and things like that. So you can go up.
Does it actually keep track of where it's safe, like where there's actually a bike lane?
I mean, they do their best. They do their best. So sometimes it might lead you into a place that you're like, maybe I wouldn't have gone this way.
And to be clear, Google Maps gives traffic, you know, giving you directions. They can do it by public transportation, by car, of course, by walking, and now by biking. Very cool combination of tools. So you can actually assess how long it will take me to take a bus there versus how long it will take to take a bike there. Miles uses this service all the time.
Right. At the same time, I find that one of the things I'd like to do is put my bike on the bike rack on the bus, take the bus to a certain place, and then bike someplace else, like if I were up on campus or if I was driving around.
Get to high ground and go downhill.
And unfortunately, we can't do that yet with the Google. It's either you look to see how the bus is going or you look to see how the bike route is going. So you have to do two different queries.
How do they do that? Because I always see the bike racks in front of the buses, but it looks like, you know, three or maybe four bikes fit on there. So what happens when you're like, do you ever get into that situation?
You have to have a folding bike like me. Then you fold your bike up, you take it on the bus, and
it happens every once in a while. But honestly, after riding the bus for years and doing that situation, it happens extremely rarely, far less often than you would think. The most that it ever happened was when in that very early morning when people are first going up to the university, for example. Then you have to buy for it, but it's usually people say, "Okay, well, I'll take the next bus,"
right? Oh, and then it's okay.
Well. And then, of course, if you're starting off of the metro, if you're starting off
with
Bay and Mission,
with you could just bike for a while too.
Yeah, if you're starting off with Bay and Mission, you're usually it's a lot more contentious.
Yeah, definitely. One of the other things is that it has the Wiggle. Do you guys know about the Wiggle in San Francisco? There are two huge hills to get up to Golden Gate Park, and so you do this kind of wiggle. You turn right and you turn left and you turn right and you turn left and go on this wiggle to get there, because that way you won't go up the hills, right?
Right.
So whenever you see a hill, you turn. and then you eventually get to Golden Gate Park.
Wait, if you ever see a hill, you turn, you will not be going uphill. So you do have to go uphill to some degree.
Well,
we can talk about this later.
In any case.
Thank you very much for that.
Very cool story.
Lindsay, what's going on with social networking sites? Is there another one, please?
There's yet another social networking site, and this one gets special mention because William Shatner is putting it together.
Surely you can't be serious. No.
I do not jest. William Shatner. It's supposed to be like a social networking site for sci-fi geeks. It seems more like a crowdsourcing movie and game project thing, but depending on your specialty, whether it's like animation, acting, writing, you register on one of six planets, and then projects are designated as different starships, which recruit talent from the other planets. So,
do they have Ryza? You go to Ryza.
I'm sure. No.
I just want to hear
geeky joke.
Yeah, I just want to hear Shatner scream into it. .com.
It's funny you mention that, because he puts a video together demonstrating how it works, and that's exactly what it looks like he's doing. Screaming con in the intro. You see it?
Wow.
It's just like the worst put together video ever.
What's amazing about William Shatner to me is that he knows how to laugh at himself, and he's capitalized on that so much.
Yep. Like, you know, when everyone's doing it.
But I mean, he especially.
Like, you got to hear the recordings from the 70s. They are works of art.
I'm a rocket man. That one. Yeah. Look that one up.
Why don't we
Mr. Tambourine Man.
Sky with Diamonds.
Yeah, Shatner and Spock, Leonard Nimoy, put together an album called Spaced Out. If you haven't heard it, go buy it off iTunes for $10. It'll be the best $10 you've ever spent. You can listen to that over and over again for endless hours of entertainment.
Of course, you can listen to KOSP for endless hours of entertainment, and
that's
you're
true.
Doing so right now. So give us a call. We operate off of donations from our listeners, pledges from our listeners. We are functional because people that listen participate. If you haven't participated, or you've participated and you feel, you know what, I could probably participate a little bit more, we really could use it. We have this great drive goal of $80,000. We are 10 minutes to the end of that goal, and we only have $3,500 left to go. That's really good. But it would be better as if we actually hit the goal. So let's go ahead and do that. Call up right now. Make a pledge of $20. That will really do it. If everyone right now listened to the station, listening to KOSP right now, called in for a pledge of $20, we'd be done. Easy. Because there's that many people out there. But you're not doing it is causing, well, that's the loss of you, unfortunately. I'd like everyone to participate. Miles, you want to add to that? You've done this before. Yeah, last week I was really impressed with what you said. So say it again.
I don't really have anything specific to say. Everyone knows the score.
Well,
everyone knows what's going on with public radio. People have watched public television, public radio. You know what it's like. And I know, you know, people think about, oh, the pledge drive comes up. And at the same time, I think of what I said last week, which is if you're watching commercial TV or listening to commercial radio,
you're paying for it all the time.
Yeah, well, actually, you're not. You're not the consumer. You are the product. The advertisers are the consumer.
Here it's different.
Right, and here it's different. So when you hear public radio, when you hear things like pledge drives, I want you to remember that they are treating you like you are a person, like you are the person that they want to please.
Let me ask you to do one thing for me. You have contributed before to KOSP many times, in fact. Mm-hmm. And I mean, no offense, you're a very good friend of mine. You're also a procrastinator. So what motivated you to do it? And how did it feel when you did?
The first time I did it, it was because I was involved with KOSP.
Mm-hmm.
It was because I was doing a radio show. And honestly, through doing one program, I was introduced to things like NPR. I never listened to NPR before I did the show. And
at the time, your first pledge, we followed Charlie Lang's show, which actually used to be on Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
And
great show.
I think that's when we should follow it. And I remember you got into listening to the show and got into listening to KOS, you know, in public radio. And I remember going into the station and we were listening to Charlie's show in the other room and they were talking about how important the program is. And you're like, I'm doing this.
Right. And I pledged and got a CD from Charlie. Yeah.
And how'd it feel?
It was wonderful. I feel bad about saying it's a transformative experience because for me it was because I do this as a regular basis, but as a show.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it did change my outlook. Like I said, it changed the way that I thought about community, changed the way that I thought about radio, where it became, in a way, it's more difficult to listen to commercial radio because you saw the difference. You heard the difference. You felt the difference.
And you see that with just television programming, for example. It is designed to get as many people to watch it, eyeballs glued, so that they can sell those eyeballs to their consumer, which is actually their business model, which is actually the commercial industry, like the commercial the companies, the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That's their target market. Our target market is not that. Our target market is the listeners that actually listen to the show.
Right. And
that's a very different thing.
And the thing you do have to wonder about is where do you get shows like Charlie Lang's?
Yeah.
Where do you get shows like Dr. Don?
Right?
Where do you get shows like
Geek Speak, which is a really kind of cool show?
Yeah, or Democracy Now.
There's tons of them.
Right.
Everything we do here is done for the people that are listening, not for some commercial industry that's trying to sell you something. And it's a very different outlook on how things go. And I agree. I definitely agree.
And if you have any suggestions, by all means, call in, send in your pledge, and say, you know, I wish this were X, because public radio is here for you.
Yeah. Thank you, Miles, for that. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. You can be thanked in the last thanking section right now by calling one of these numbers and donating, 888-777-1507. Let's go ahead and fill in one more news story. Who should we do? Miles, please. You were just talking about what's going on with the president.
Obama is discussing a 3-strikes anti-piracy law. And there's been a lot of talk about the, you know, BitTorrent being used for file sharing or LimeWire and things like that, and a lot of back and forth about how much piracy is hurting the industry. And one of the things that, or some things that have been worrisome, is that there's a new copyright bill going around that is not being discussed openly. It's actually not being publicly discussed by people who are taking part. People who are taking part have been told that they are not allowed to talk about it, which is a very bad thing to talk about with copyright, because that's information. To say how information is going to be done in private behind closed doors is a very sketchy thing. But this 3-strikes anti-piracy law is being drafted to mirror the French law that was passed a little while back. As it turns out, after passing the French law, which is a 3-strikes law where if you are caught file sharing, then you get your internet access cut off.
Mm-hmm.
They found that piracy has not only not subsided, it's increased.
And it's not effective.
And there's also the worry that if you drop off people sharing music, that the demand for music from the established sources will go down as well. That it's a form of free advertising and they're taking away the advertising. But really, it comes down to this, wait, how are they finding out? Are they going to the ISPs to do it? And which means that the ISPs are going to be on the hook for doing tracking information on their own customers, which is going to cause some ill will.
All right. Well,
do you disagree
with the idea of three strikes of piracy?
I personally do. Yeah, I have a problem with three strikes in general because it takes away judicial oversight to be able a judge to be able to say in this case it's bad, in this case it's not as bad on a case.
Also,
case
in
basis.
All these laws, you know, the idea of who owns the copyright and is a very strange and difficult thing to do. And the only way you really prove that is by whoever has the most lawyers. So the idea of saying if you get accused a couple times, three times, then you no longer have access to this wonderful world resource of the internet seems ridiculous. Like, it's not the right way to pirate.
Yeah, and some countries have actually come forward and said that internet access is a
human right.
Human right. Or saying that lack of access to it means that it's
taking away
your ability to be informed, which is going to erode democracy. Now, this isn't to say that everyone should go out and just pirate as a form of protest. I do think that people should be compensated for their work. If you do like a song, please buy it.
Right. Definitely. I agree. Lindsay, you're going to be the last news story for the day. So what's going on with Harvard?
Okay. So this particular thing actually just ended, but I'm hoping that they'll start up a new one, the Harvard Catalyst Challenge. So Harvard has partnered with a company that basically is data collection. So let me look this up. So Innocentive is the name of the company, and they've asked the Harvard community to collect data like crowdsourcing, and they put out a challenge where there's a money reward for the best questions asked about type 1 diabetes. So they're trying to use the general public, and you can just go up to the website on Innocentive for this project, and you can submit a different question area that you want them to research. And the top items are going to get a money reward. They're going to actually research that in the Harvard, in the Harvard programs. And so it's a way for the public to actually suggest different things, different ways of thinking than the scientists with their top-down thinking.
Great.
And so one of the suggestions was something like wireless connections to heat and pressure sensors and shoes to compensate for loss of sensation in a diabetic's feet.
Oh, cool.
So when they develop unfelt sores, it leads to amputation.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is just one thing that can develop into much more projects.
Great. It's the Harvard Catalyst Project. I'm sure more have come about. Thank you very much, Lindsay, for that. I want to make a thank you to Michael, who donated, friend and listener, and also a contributor to the station. He's actually made a great song, which I'm going to play next week as our theme song. We've played it once before. So, Michael, thank you very much for the donation. Ben?
I also have a thanks. Thank you to Irene from Santa Cruz, and she was a first-time pledge. So thank you very much, Irene.
Great. And I just want to mention that right now we have a minute left. And I'm looking for a couple geeks out there that are well paid. Waz, you listening today? Somebody that's got a good job in the geek field, appreciates what we do. Sometimes maybe you've said, hey, just go listen to Geek Speak, call them up instead of helping your mom out or your sister out with a tech question, because we're here for everybody. Go ahead and make a donation. A couple of you get together. And hey, a large donation at this point, we have $3,500 left to go. Go ahead and make a $2,000 donation. If you can afford that, we can use it. You do that, you get to come and be at a dinner with us. You'll get to have a meal with the geeks. You get to go to Oswald's or be a part of the leadership circle, which actually defines the future of KOSP. So I'm looking for a geek that's real well paid, a few of them. Donate what you can afford. We have $3,500 left to go. Let's make this pledge. Call up, donate $1,000. Call up and donate $5,000 and put us to shame. That'd be great. The phone numbers are 888-777-1507. Al?
This is Al Luckow with GeekSpeak's Crazy USB Device of the Week. You may feel like a nobody now, but with hard work and persistence and a lot of sweat, you can make something of yourself. You can get out of the neighborhood. If I can change and you can change, everybody can change. Going that extra round when you don't think you can, that's what makes all the difference in your life. In order to do that, you're going to need an open USB port and the USB boxer. That's right, I said boxer.
This is a little plastic man in shorts connected to your USB port. He stands next to your computer and hits a punching bag. You control the punches with your arrow keys. And what's even more tough than the little plastic boxing man next to your keyboard? A little plastic boxing man with a goatee next to your keyboard. There's even some sort of game associated with this device, but who cares? He's a punching man that you control, and that's all that matters. It says on the website the minimum order is 12. I don't know what that means, but having 12 of these things seems pretty crazy to me. Or awesome. You decide.
For GeekSpeak and KOSP, I'm Lyle Troxell. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used with permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. See you next week.